Mind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast hosted by Peyton Heben.
This is episode 25. Today's guest is someone that works on the publishing side of the music business. She is the senior director of A&R at Round Hill Music in Nashville. Please welcome Lindsay Will.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First podcast?
First podcast.
Nice.
A little nervous.
Good. You should be. No, I'm
just
kidding. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically the premise of this podcast is to like have the guests kind of tell their story about like growing up around music and like their college or not college, just kind of like what got them falling in love with music and then what got them into the music business. So if you just want to start pretty much from the top, just kind of what got you like falling in love with music.
Sure. Let's see. I'm from a small town in Arkansas called Springdale, Arkansas. It's right next to Fayetteville where the University of Arkansas is. And I grew up, I just always loved to sing and play music. And when I was in third grade, I started begging my parents for guitar lessons, and they wouldn't pay for guitar lessons. They wanted me to really act like they wanted to see that I was really interested in it. They didn't want it to be like a hobby that I did for like a month and then didn't do anymore. And so I begged for lessons for a year until they were like, okay, she's serious about it. She wants to actually do this. And so they put me in guitar lessons in fourth grade, and I really only played guitar so I could have something to sing to. And so started doing that, and I always loved to write. Even whenever I was a kid, like, English was my favorite subject. I hated math, hated science, but anything that involved writing, I was all about. And so then I started, you know, writing music, writing songs. I grew up in the Taylor Swift era. And so she was my idol growing up. And then I started playing some shows around Arkansas and touring around Arkansas. Arkansas has a lot of festivals, especially in the summertime. And so you can really tour around Arkansas like all summer and make some pretty good money. And so I started doing that whenever I was probably like 14, 15. And so really just loved music. And then my mom and I started coming to Nashville when I was 15. And we would make two trips a year. We'd come up here in the wintertime and then in the summertime. And I'd just play like writers' round shows, all that stuff, try to network. And I remember the first time I came to Nashville, I was like, oh my God, dreams come true here. This is amazing. Magical city. And then I met a writer and producer named Billy Dawson. He's currently signed to Boom Publishing. And I met him through a family friend. And Billy really took me under his wing and brought me into like my first co-writing sessions and showed me what that was. And I was so young. I was like 16 at the time. And he just really showed me around the town, introduced me to people, and really encouraged me to come to Nashville. And so after that, every summer I would come here, work with Billy, and we eventually like put out like a little EP, like 3-song EP on me. And I mean, the songs, looking back, they were awful. They were all about like my high school boyfriends and stuff like that. And so funny. But anyway, so after that, I knew that I wanted to be here and move to Nashville. And so Billy actually told me about MTSU. And he was like, hey, you should really consider like checking that school out and going there, because my parents wouldn't let me move here without going to college, which was smart. And so toured MTSU, fell in love with it. And they have a really good music business program. So I moved here in 2014 and went to school there. Yeah.
Nice. I know MTSU and Belmont are like the two top dogs.
Mm-hmm.
What was there anything that like strayed you away from Belmont?
Yeah, I really wanted the full college experience. Like I really wanted to be in a sorority. That was big to me. I grew up, you know, 10 minutes away from the U of A, so big SEC school. Yeah, and so sure. I knew that I wasn't going to get that, but I wanted like something that was close to that. And I wanted like a football team, tailgates, all that stuff. And Belmont was just so expensive, like so expensive. And MTSU, I could get in-state tuition there. Arkansas has this program where if there's no university in Arkansas that has a major that you want that a bordering state offers, you can get in-state. And so once I found that out, it was so cheap for me to go to MTSU. And so ended up doing that. And I didn't want to be surrounded by music all the time. You know, I thought that that would just be so exhausting and draining and constantly comparing yourself. And it was true. At MTSU, I had a good group of friends who were doing music and doing that. But most of my friends like had different majors. They were, you know, doing aviation or nursing or, you know, just a basic business degree. And so that was really nice, just not being surrounded by that all the time.
So coming from Arkansas, obviously, being that it's a southern state, like a very southern state, there's a lot of country influence there.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any country like influences, or were you more like mm-hmm. falling in love with the pop side of things because yeah. of Taylor Swift?
It's funny. Whenever I was a kid, my dad, he always loved country music. And my mom, she listened to like 80s rock and pop music and stuff like that. And whenever I was a kid, I did not like country music for whatever reason. I was super influenced by the pop genre and stuff like that. And it wasn't really until like Keith Urban, like his Golden Road album, so good. And so there were a couple artists that came out like him, and like Miranda Lambert was taking off when I was like 10. Like there were a couple of artists like that who were coming out with some really, really good music. And so it really wasn't until I was like 10 to 12 that I switched over and really discovered like country music and how great it was. And then also, of course, Taylor Swift had a huge effect yeah. on that. And, you know, she was a country artist at the time. So,
oh, yeah, true. Good point.
And so I'd say like once I hit like 10 to 12, I was all about country and like all about the genre. And I mean, so many people had influences on me growing up. Even Hunter Hayes, he was really taking off whenever I was probably 13, 14. And I remember like watching Storm Warning, that music video, come up on CMT one morning. And I thought that that was the coolest music video, coolest song. So, lots of good country influences once I was older.
Was there anybody that was doing it in Arkansas? Like, I know Tracy Lawrence, I think, is from there. Maybe.
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Who's from Arkansas?
Johnny Cash. That's our big one. So big Johnny Cash fan over here. Let's see. Ashley McBride is actually from there. She's from Fort Smith, and that's about an hour away from me. Let's see. Adam Hambrick is from there. Matt Stell is from there. Trying to think of who else. There's not a whole lot of artists. Shay Mooney from Dan and Shay.
Oh, cool.
He's from there. There's not a whole lot from Arkansas. You got to think about it.
Yeah, that's why I only knew of like a few people. I know a lot of people like out like in Nashville that are from Arkansas
mm-hmm.
that have no affiliation with the music business.
Yeah,
but I didn't know like many artists that came from.
Yeah, there's not a ton, but I mean Johnny Cash makes up for a lot of them, so
yeah.
That's a big one.
So you went to MTSU and you got your bachelor's in music business.
Mm-hmm.
What made you fall in love with publishing?
Yeah,
was that something like out of college that you made that decision, or in
mm-hmm.
college, or like what was your first internship, or just tell me like getting into the business?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know what publishing was, and I feel like a lot of people don't that grow up outside of the music business. Like growing up, you only hear about like record labels and producers and artists. You don't really hear about all the other avenues that there are in the music industry to make money. And so going to school at MTSU, you have to take, you know, a touring class, a marketing class, a label class, publishing class, like hit all the different like sectors, which is really cool. And so since I was a songwriter and grew up doing that, and at the time in college, I was still pursuing like the songwriter artist thing. I took a publishing class, had no idea that that was even a job. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I had a really cool professor. His name was Matthew O'Brien, and he was a music attorney back in the day before he became a professor in town, or a professor at MTSU, and he was amazing. And that class was so fun. And he'd start the class every day. He'd play like 5 to 10 demos of old writers that he used to work with, and he'd be like, "Okay, pick out the two most commercially viable songs out of this batch and tell me why." And we would go over like the music charts like every single week and what was going on in town and like why certain songs were rising, why certain songs were dropping off the charts. And so taking that class, I thought that that was the coolest thing ever. And I was like, man, I could get a job doing this. Like, this sounds amazing. And so I became close with him and asked him how to start interning in publishing. And he hooked me up with one of his old students named Bob Squants. And Bob worked at Roundtail at the time. And he hired all the interns over there. And so he was like, you should meet my old student, Bob. So I met with Bob and he interviewed me and hired me for a creative internship. It was like, gosh, when was that? Forever ago. Fall 2017? Yeah. Fall 2017. Interned at Roundtail, and it was the coolest internship ever. It was awesome. and worked the front desk there. We were at Round Hill. We were in an old music row house at the time that we still own, but it's fully just studios now. But back then, all of publishing was over there. And we had a couple of really cool studios over there that a couple of our writers worked in. And Round Hill had a killer roster back then. Like, we had Jimmy Robbins was signed over there, and Jimmy was really like on a hot streak at the time. We had Craig Wiseman. We joint ventured all of Big Loud at the time, and so all those writers were over there, which was awesome. Dallas Davidson was signed to us. The roster and the catalog at Round Hill was just amazing, and so working there as an intern was the coolest thing. And after that, I kind of decided, I was like, okay, I kind of want to do this a little bit more and explore this. I was still doing the artist songwriter thing, and then that kind of opened my eyes into what being a songwriter and an artist really was, like seeing that and seeing how hard it really is. And if you're an artist, like, you have to put yourself out there so much and talk about yourself constantly, and you kind of have to have an ego, like, you have to do that. And that's just not me. I hate talking about myself. I hate putting myself out there. I actually am, like, kind of shy. And so once I kind of saw what it really was, I was like, you know what? I don't think that I'm suited towards this. I think the business side is much more suited towards me. And so I started pursuing that more.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you make a good point. Like, the artistry thing is, it's like a lot of people don't realize it until they're fully in it. Mm-hmm. Like, you come to Nashville, like, a lot of people go do it in their hometown, and they're like, yeah, oh, I can really pursue this. Mm-hmm. And then you get to Nashville, and you kind of see, like, how cutthroat it is, yep, how competitive it is, and it's just, like, it kind of wears you down,
mm-hmm,
but also, like, there is still room for you.
Totally, like, absolutely.
Even if you don't want to be an artist,
mm-hmm,
you could still be a songwriter if, mm-hmm, that is a door that opens up for you. Or just to, like, you have the talent, mm-hmm, you have the knowledge, you could, like, channel that and do something like you did, which was just, like, put it to publishing, which, yeah, is, like, amazing for your resume and just, like, your knowledge of songs.
Yeah, just as fulfilling, for sure. And then I talk to my writers about this all the time. I think that it helps that I play music and that, like, I have written songs before and things like that, because I understand where they're coming from. And being able to talk theory with a writer goes so far. Like, most people in the music business play something or, you know a little bit, but just having that little extra knowledge, like, really, really, truly helps. Even, you know, talking about, like, a key change or something like that, being able to, you know, talk about that with those guys goes a long way.
Yeah, and I'm not somebody that has played an instrument. I can't sing. I can't play an instrument. I'm just the suit.
Just the suit.
Just the suit. I just love okay. country music, and I just love business.
Yeah.
So, like, I've had conversations with artists and writers about, like, me, like, I don't always fully give myself, like, credit when I'm talking to them, because I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I do in a sense, but it's also, like, when you're trying to explain how to be creative or something, like, something an artist or a songwriter can change about a song, it's like, me, that's difficult to do,
mm-hmm,
due to I couldn't do it better.
Yeah, like, right, yeah.
I'm not gonna tell you how to write a song.
Yeah,
like, I'll
totally.
Just listen and be like, yeah, it's sweet.
Yep.
You know? But, like, I think there is a serious place, and there's a need for people that have that ability that go and do things in the business.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I feel like the business, and I'm, like, calling myself out here, but I feel like there needs to be a lot more people in the business where the music business is run by people that do music.
Yeah, I totally agree.
More than just, like, money-hungry suits. And, like, people may hate that, but, like, I call myself out because I have no talent in the music. But, I mean, I think for sure it needs to be run by the creatives,
yeah,
for sure.
Agreed. Yeah, it gives you a different perspective. Yeah, that used to be, like, what's the word? Like, looked down upon. Like, I know whenever I was looking to intern, a lot of people gave me advice as I was going into interviews, and they're like, don't tell them that you're a songwriter. Yeah. Because, you know, that's not a good thing to be a songwriter,
like,
and get a
dipping.
Job. Yeah, totally. But I thought that that was so silly. I still think it's so silly. Like, whenever I look to hire interns, if they're a songwriting major, good. That's great. Like, if they know how to play an instrument, awesome. That's bonus points, because they understand song structure and, mm-hmm, just, like, simple things. We're working in music. We should be able to play music too. You know, that shouldn't be looked down upon. And I think that that's changing a lot over the past few years. I know so many people who do both a little bit, you know, and yeah, it's a good thing.
Being around it, I've come to learn a lot. Like, mm-hmm, I don't think I could go write a full song, or like my brain does not have the ability for some reason to learn the guitar. I,
yeah,
tried, I bought one, and I've tried when I was a kid, and then when I got to college, but I could never figure it out. My brain just cannot process it.
Yeah.
But like over the years, just being around it, I've come to like understand things more and be more knowledgeable, like key changes. Mm. Like I couldn't tell you like how, but I could like see it and like hear it and, you know. But yeah, so transitioning from the artistry into the business, like after your first internship, like what were some things that you had learned, like some main things that you had learned about the business after your first internship in publishing?
Let's see. It's a lot harder than it looks from the outside. and takes a lot more time than you realize. You see all these, especially with artists, you see new ones pop up every single day and you're like, oh my God, they did that overnight. And it's like, no, they've been doing this for 10 years. And so just seeing how much of a journey it is, in this town and on the business side too, it takes so long to, you know, quote unquote, make it. Let's see what else. Whenever I was going from my internship to my first job, I think you start in this town and you get your first job and you're like, wow, like I'm working in the music industry and you have, you know, all these big dreams and big eyes and, you know, you kind of get a little full of yourself or like on your high horse, like a little bit. And, my first job was not like that. Very thankful for my first job, but it was very much so a starting job where I was doing all the dirty work and taking out the trash, doing the dishes, like, you know, everything that nobody else wanted to do. Yeah, I was doing it. And yeah, definitely paying my dues. But looking back, it was a really good thing because I needed to get knocked down a peg, you know, and realize like how hard this town really is and how hard the jobs really are because it never really gets easier. And so those first few years really are just like foundation building years, I think. And so that was kind of the biggest thing, like going into the music industry, you're not going to be immediately doing your dream job or doing what you set out to do. Like I wasn't going to be pitching songs and setting up co-writes immediately, even though, you know, I kind of thought that I would be, but that's okay.
I think especially in like this younger generation, there's a, and no offense, there's like a sense of entitlement where a lot of people, like, especially if you go to like a music business school, whether that's like a Belmont MTSU or like you go anywhere, like I think Georgia has one or University of Miami, like you get a music business degree and you come to Nashville thinking like you're going to make the most money, you're going to have the best job. Like that's unfortunately just like not how it works here most of the time, unless you're like extremely lucky. You have to like pay your dues, work a lower level job and just like you said, like lay that foundation of like just being around it. Cause like if you're just around it and you're like, you're taking out the trash, you're snacking or like doing the snack drawer, whatever, like you're just like networking and learning from the people around you. And then that allows you to work your way up to the top. And that's like the biggest part of this industry is just networking and laying that foundation to build your way to the top.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just like proving that people can count on you too is another big thing. And also whenever you are doing those jobs, that's saving somebody who's a creative director who has zero time. They're worrying about all these other things. And if they don't have to worry about taking 10 minutes out of the day to do the dishes, you know, because they know that you're going to do it, like that's saving them 10 minutes out of the day. You know, like little things like that go a long way.
And I think it's important stuff like that. It's like school. Like, no one wants to go to school, and at the end of the day, you don't really have to. But going and getting your degree kind of shows a future employer that you can do something you don't want to do to get something done.
Yeah,
like you can be somewhere you don't want to be, get all the work done just to, like, have something to show for. And, like, doing that, like, you don't want to do that, but you're willing to do it to show, like, okay, I can get stuff done when you want it done, and I can be efficient. And that proves to an employer, like, I want to be here. I'm willing to do what it takes. And I think that's, like, important for younger people trying to get into the industry to understand. Like, you have to pay your dues. It's a real thing.
Absolutely.
People say it all the time. But it's, like, very important that you don't feel that sense of entitlement. Like, you're going to have to work and do something you probably don't want to do to start off in this industry. But you'll eventually get there. People see that every day.
Yeah. Your first job is, I'm going to say, almost never your dream job. Hardly ever. I'd say like 99% of people's first job is not their dream job. It's just a stepping stone and like a foot in the door to get there.
Yeah. So the internships, that's obviously something, like, it's a common theme on this podcast. Like, a lot of people do internships. Do you think that that is Like, is that like a huge part of getting into the business is the internships?
Oh, yeah. For publishing, 100%. I will say, I mean, there's always that person who, I know so many people who didn't do any music internships and moved here on a whim and have great jobs, you know, like J.D. Groover, you know, Benji over at Warner Chappell. There are so many people who didn't do that the traditional way. But I'd say for most of the town, it's so important to do internships, especially if you're wanting to get a job right out of college. Like, I have no other idea how else you would do it without interning, because that's your foot in the door. Also, that's a chance for you to see if you really want to do that job, you know, because you could intern for a booking agent and think that you really want to do that. And then you intern there and you're like, oh, no, I hate this. Like, I don't want to do it. So it's kind of like a trial period to figure out if you really want to go into that line of work or not. But yeah, absolutely. I would not have my job without my internships because I wouldn't know anybody, you know, and yeah. So many jobs, especially on the A&R side, it's different if you're doing like admin or something like that. But so many of our jobs aren't posted on LinkedIn or anything like that. So everything is through word of mouth. That's how I've gotten all my jobs, was through word of mouth. So yeah, very important.
Yeah. And that just shows the importance of networking.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. It's just like the people that you know, because opportunities will arise by just like knowing people in this town.
Absolutely.
So can you kind of explain your role as an A&R director?
Yeah.
Specifically in publishing?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. I got promoted to senior director last year, and so I'm head of the A&R department for all of Nashville now, which is awesome. And so I oversee our entire Nashville roster. So I run, let's see, we have 11 writers signed to us right now, and so I run all of their calendars. And so booking all their co-writes, all their sessions, and pitching. So I have monthly pitch meetings with all the different labels in town. So meeting with them, finding out information and playing them our writer's songs, as well as meeting with producers, managers, and artists, and pitching them songs too. I oversee all of our new signings. So from start to finish, figuring out like who we want to go after, who we want to sign, and then, you know, chasing those guys down, making sure that they want to be at Round Till. And then when we get to the phase of like offering them a deal, I'm the one who puts together those deal points and sends out the official offer. And at Round Till, we do the negotiating until we agree on like the main deal points. And so I'm the one who negotiates with that writer's attorney on deal points until we agree that, you know, on the certain things that we want to until we agree on all the deal points, and then we pass it off to our Round Till attorney. And so handling all that from start to finish is a lot, but great. And then just random like administration things, like I run our Round Till Nashville social media accounts and stuff like that, and then some other admin tasks. But yeah, handling all those writers is a lot, but it's awesome. Since we do have a smaller roster, we're very, very hands-on. And so I talk to my writers pretty much every single day. And so that takes a lot of time, you know, nurturing them, making sure that they're on the right path, getting the co-writes that they want, figuring out how to get them to the next level. So yeah, very hands-on, but it's great.
Yeah. So what are some things that you look for in mm-hmm. writers when you're signing them?
Yeah. Well, it's always a little bit different. But the main things that we really go for is we want to work with writers who want to work with us as bad as we want to work with them. And so we want writers who see what we're doing at Round Till and see the culture that we've built and the team that we've built and how hard we work and say, hey, I want to be a part of that. And so we're not going to be out there chasing down somebody who isn't at least interested in us. And that's something that we kind of changed about a year ago, going after writers. And so that's one thing. And going after people who are going to work just as hard for themselves as we're going to work for them. Because if we're putting in all this effort for your career, you better be putting in twice as much effort as we are. So really, really hard workers. I don't always look for this, but it's just something extra. I always bet on athletes. Anytime that somebody, we have so many college athletes signed to our roster. I'm trying to think. Nathan Wilson was a college athlete. Austin G was a college athlete. Ben Stoll was a college athlete. Christian Yancey was a college athlete. It's becoming like a common theme at Round Till. Because every time that somebody mentions that, I'm like, okay, if they were a college athlete, that means that they're determined. They normally show up on time. They're really good with criticism. And they were already competing at a really high level doing something else. So they're going to be able to handle it in the music industry, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So anytime I hear that, I'm like, bing, bing, bing. I want to work with you. So that's not something I look for, but it's a bonus. And then also seeing like what camps they're in. Nashville has become so campy. Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
And so definitely, you know, with Christian Yancey, one example, he was in the Austin Snell camp really early on. And that camp is kind of small. And he's one of Austin's best friends. And so that was a big flag for me whenever I found out that he was in that camp, because I was like, okay, that's a huge bonus to signing you, is having somebody who's already in that camp. So really seeing what camps they're in. And then it also depends on what I'm looking for at the time. This past year, I really needed some more producers at Roundtill, and I was really going after that pretty hard. And so two just kind of fell in my lap, and they were exactly what I was looking for. Matt McVaney and Brandon Day just signed both of those guys. And they were producers, killer producers, and they just checked every single box that I was looking for at the time. The year prior to that, when I signed Nathan Wilson, Austin G, Christian Yancey, I was looking for some young artists to develop on our roster. And so that's really what I was going for that year. So every year, it kind of depends. But hard workers, also good attitudes, good people, you know, people that you want to work with every single day.
And Christian just signed a record deal.
Yeah.
1 RPM.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah, pumped about that. Yeah, it's going to be great.
So are you kind of like, when you say you're looking for development artists as well, so you are kind of running point on the development side of things as well?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I say me, we have a whole team at Roundtill, our A&R team. There's three of us. It's Mike Whalen, who's our general manager of the office, and then it's me and a guy under me named Taylor Antle. It's us three, so we're all doing it together. But yeah, doing all that artist development, which has been so fun and a totally new and different challenge. Very hands-on. If you think that like just working with a writer is hands-on, like artist development is twice as hands-on. But it's been really fun. Like with Christian, you know, he came in and he was very green on the artist side, and he's good. He's just so naturally good and gifted and talented, has a good ear, great voice. He's got everything together, but it's been trying to put the pieces together and figure out like who he really wants to be as an artist, and like who he sees himself as, and what sound he really wants to shoot for, and even like looks, like how he wants to look on stage, and just different things like that. Figuring out his producer, Matt McVaney, now that he's on board, I really wanted a producer in-house that could help produce these guys, and Matt's that, which is awesome. And so Matt's now producing Christian and Nathan Wilson, and so Matt's going to have a huge part in helping develop these guys, because he's essentially developing their sounds now, which is so cool. But yeah, it's been really fun doing that over the past year.
Development is such a cool part of the industry. Like now that I'm in it, like getting to see, like you mentioned, the styling, like there's so many important factors that the outside world doesn't really think about, like the styling of it or the sound, and then like the marketing plans, and just like everything about it is so cool, because you just get to see the artist and you don't get to see like what really goes into building that artist, especially when they're coming up from the bottom. Like Christian came from being like a writer and a college athlete to then a writer to now he's like chasing the artist thing, and it's, you're seeing it pay off, but you're seeing little changes here and there.
Yeah.
And it's just super cool to like see the artist development side of things, being in that now.
Yeah, absolutely. And seeing it work too, because you're just kind of throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks at the beginning, and seeing a couple things like come to fruition, like with Nathan, like I mean with Christian signing this deal, and then with Nathan Wilson, he had a little viral moment back in March, and same thing with him. We were just kind of throwing things at the wall, seeing what stuck. And he called me this one day, and his TikTok had been dead for the past year. Like when he first created his TikTok, he had a really good viral moment and gained a lot of followers and a lot of traction that way. And then for the past year, we just couldn't get anything to take off. And then he called me this one night and he was like, hey, I noticed that a lot of people are getting a lot of views on these videos where they just post like three random photos on TikTok and then post the lyrics over it and then post the sound to that. And he goes, I'm going to try that and see if that works. And I was like, cool, go for it. And that's what blew up. This song fell in. Like the next day he called me and he got like 30,000 views overnight. And he started getting like 3,000 to 4,000 followers per day for like a solid month. And all his views started going up, up, up. And then he had like a ton of pre-saves all from doing that. And like, who would have thought that posting like three photos with a sound over it and lyrics is what would have set his TikTok off. But that really got the ball rolling for him. And that's what made all these major labels start reaching out with him or reaching out to him and wanting to meet with him. It's crazy. You just never know what's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge point is you never know what's going to work. Like even the people working in the digital side of things, the social media content, it's like a gamble.
Yeah.
I had someone, I had Mitch Wallace on this podcast earlier. And we were talking about like what works on TikTok and what works on Instagram, like just trying to figure out the algorithm. And it's a really good episode, but I mean, at the end of the day, there's no guarantee of what works.
Right.
So when you're trying to do artist development, you're trying to just build fans and build the streams and you're having to do a lot of social media and it's really a gamble of what's going to work.
Right. Absolutely.
So you got your start in publishing and then now you're still in it, but also adding on the artist development side of things. What have you kind of learned throughout the process of artist development? Because I don't know if that's something they teach at MTSU, like in the music business program.
Let's see. We had like a label class. So that was probably some, honestly, like I feel like a lot of the artist development that I've been doing is stuff that managers do, but none of my guys have managers, right? Well, one of my guys, Austin G, has a manager. But Christian and Nathan don't have management. And I feel like in publishing, if an artist that you work with doesn't have management, it just automatically falls back on the publisher until they get that piece of their team. And so a lot of these conversations that I have with these guys, you know, they would normally be having with their manager, but they don't have that. So that's me for now, which is cool and great. But it has been cool to see just like I said, all this stuff come to fruition with them, and also just seeing how hard it is and how long it takes. Like with Nathan, we started having these label talks back in March. And I think that, gosh, how long ago is that now? 5 months? 5 months ago? I'm bad at math.
Yeah. It's the eighth month.
Yeah. And I think that just now we're getting close to signing something for him. And same thing with Christian. Like we met with 1RPM shoot about the same time back in March. Like it takes a long time. Yeah. Like you think it takes a long time to sign a publishing deal? Like it takes even longer
just
to
lay
like
the foundation. Kind of like you had said prior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's see. And then realizing that you don't know everything. And then also I tell my guys, like, I'm always going to trust your gut. Like I tell Nathan, it's hard for him. He has so many good songs. He's written so many good songs over the past year. And he has a lot of difficulty deciding like what should be the next single. And he always goes back and forth on like, should this song be the next single? Should this song be the next single? And I always tell him, I'm like, trust your gut. And I'm going to tell you what I think you should do. But at the end of the day, if you don't agree with me and you want to do this instead, I'm going to fully support you because it's your career. You're in the driver's seat. I'm just here to help you and like help you get to where you want to be. And so definitely seeing those guys. Christian's always been like that. Christian, like he asked for your opinion, but he's gonna do what he wants to do, like no matter what. Like he's so confident. But a couple of the other guys, you know, just really encouraging them to trust themselves and trust who they are as an artist.
I think the like choosing what song you're gonna record and put out is such an interesting concept because there's a lot of artists that approach it differently. You have artists that are like, well, I'm not recording anything or putting out anything until it has a moment on social media because it doesn't warrant me like putting out the music if I don't know for sure there's a like demand for it. And then there's the artists that are like, I'm gonna record whatever song I love, no matter if it fits their brand or if the fans want it. Like if the fans want something else, you know, they could be like, well, I like this song better, I'm gonna record this. So it's such an interesting concept because every artist approaches it differently.
Mm-hmm.
So like what have you kind of found to be the most efficient when working with the artists?
Yeah. I mean, nobody really knows. I will say the couple of songs that I've picked where I'm like, this is a shoe-in, this is a hit song, haven't done nearly as good as the ones that I haven't picked. So like with Nathan, with Felon, I can't remember how that came about. If he was really planning on drop. Oh no, that one. He wrote that song And the next week he was like, hey, this is going to be my next single. And he normally never does that. He normally sits on it for a few months and sees if he really likes it. And I was like, okay, cool. You trust your gut. Like, you have a good feeling about it. And he was like, yeah, I just have this feeling. And I just know that this is going to be a big song for me. And I was like, cool, go for it. And then everything for him, like every song release that he's had where he's had that feeling has done well. It's the same thing. He has this new song that he's been teasing called Mrs. Lonely. And same thing for that. I was reading on another song to be the next single. I wanted it to be like an up-tempo, like great live song. And so I was rooting for another song. And then he just had this feeling about Mrs. Lonely. And he was like, no, I really feel like this is the song. And he started teasing it and it started blowing up. And so I was like, okay, you're right. And so for him, like, I trust him now and trust his ears. So it just depends. But then there are stories like that where, you know, a artist teases or doesn't even tease a song and it drops and it blows up. So I don't really know what the magic formula is.
That's, I've always been curious and found it so interesting because, like, you could have a moment on TikTok, you put it out and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Because attention spans are like 10 seconds, if that. You know, they could see it and blow it up and then you put it out because it takes a while to record it, upload it, and whatnot. So by the time you do that, people have moved on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then there's, well, I'm just going to put out whatever I want because I love it. And then it either does well or it doesn't. And that's just, they're going to have to live with it either way.
Right.
So being in the artist development thing, it's kind of cool to study that and just, but like you said, you just kind of have to trust the artist because at the end of the day, they're the creative. They're the ones that believe in the song. They live with it the most.
Yeah. And they're the ones who know their fan base better than anyone. 100%. You know, I'm not going to know their fan base better than them. They're the ones who are running their socials and seeing all the comments every single day and are playing the shows. They know it. You know, I'm just here to help.
Yeah. So what were some of the, like, your favorite things that you learned in the music business program? Because I feel like a lot of people kind of battle whether they just go to a school to go to college to have the experience or they go to like a Belmont for music business. So like what's your opinion on that? Do you feel it's necessary to go to a school with music business?
Yeah, it's not necessary. The guy under me, we hired this guy named Taylor Antle to work under me last year and to round out our team. And he didn't go to college for music business. He never worked in publishing before. And he picked it up. Anybody can learn publishing or learn the music industry. But for me, it really, really helped me, I will say. One of the biggest things that I learned was I took a contracts and legal issues class. And it was the class in college that everyone hated. Like every semester, whenever somebody would have to take that class, they'd be dreading it because it was so hard. But for me, now I read contracts every single day. And I remember the first time that I had to read a publishing contract, like for my job, I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I learned in school. And a contract can be so intimidating, you know, not knowing where to find things. And, you know, they use all these big words. And so just knowing that and like knowing how to dissect it is just so incredibly beneficial. That's truly, I think that's the most important thing that I learned in college was knowing that. So that was great. Also, I took a really cool like social media marketing class in college that was actually just an elective. But it helped so much. It taught me MailChimp, and I use MailChimp every single week in my job. It taught me how to build a website. I use that a lot in my job, like how to do eBlast, just a couple of like random, like really great social media tools that I ended up using every single day. And so knowing that already going into the music business really helped.
Yeah, I studied entrepreneurship at Florida Gulf Coast. And that, like I don't want to say I regret it because I don't. Like, I appreciate what I've learned. It did teach me a lot about the business and the networking and just obvious, like, the music business at the end of the day, it's like you are your own business because you're networking and trying to sell yourself and just, but my brother is going to be going to Belmont in like 20 days. He starts, he'll be moving up here. And I really do envy him because I do wish that I get to do what he's about to do.
Yeah.
Like I wish someone like sat me down and taught me the specifics of the music business. Yeah. Because now I'm having to just like learn as I go about certain things. Like I never got to figure out what I loved. I did management and now I'm doing A&R and I love like the A&R thing that I do and that you do, it's very, like you said, very similar to the management and artist development. So like having a background in that, I got to translate that to A&R. But I wish I got to learn a little bit about everything.
Yeah.
Because now I'm learning about publishing a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I love that side of it. Like, I love every aspect of the music business. So I do think that going to school for music business is something that someone should do if given the opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great. Highly recommend. I wouldn't have wanted to do it any other way. But it's not the end all be all. Like, if somebody can't go down here and go to school, you know. Because once again, Taylor, the guy that we hired, he's been there for a year and he's crushing it doing publishing, and he's picked it up so quickly. Like, we're not doing rocket science, but it definitely does help if you do go to school for it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. That's not the end all be all, because you can learn by experience. Yeah, the best way to learn is by experience.
Yeah, 100%. For sure. When I was at Round Hill interning, because my dad, he worked for, you know, corporate America, and it's just, it, you know, very different, as I'm sure it was for you. Nobody in Arkansas was going to school for music business. And so he just did not, he thought he knew how the music industry worked, but it's so different than like any other job out there. And so for him, he was like, you need to go and get your master's degree, you know, because back then, you know, it was just school. Like, and he was like, you need to get an MBA. And I was interning at Round Hill, and the general manager at the time, his name was Mark Brown. And I was picking his brain, and I was like, hey, I'm thinking about going to get like my master's at MTSU in like music business. What do you think about that? And he just like laughed at me, and he said, working here is your master's. And I was like, oh, okay. He was like, getting your first job, that's your master's degree. He was like, you do not need a master's degree. And it's so true. Would have been a waste of money.
Yeah. So my whole family, well, my mom's side, which is the biggest that we are like, that I grew up around, they all went to West Virginia University. So I was like, I'm going to get a degree from West Virginia. And they have a music business master's program that you can do fully online. So I was like, I'm going to go back to school, get my master's. It's like 2 years, but it's like $80,000.
Oh my God. Yeah, not worth it. Yeah.
But I was like, I'm 100% no matter what, going to get my master's degree. And I talked to someone in the business, and they were like, you are an idiot.
Yeah.
If you go and waste, like, you have a job, why waste your time and money going back to school when like you have the best opportunity that these people that are going for their masters that they want.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like you're learning more than you will in a classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. So highly recommend college. Don't recommend going to school and getting your master's for music.
Yeah. Unless you want to spend money.
Yeah, totally. Then go for it.
but yeah, so with this publishing job, I mean, I know pitching songs is difficult because it's always up in the air. Like, who's cutting? Who's taking outside songs in the first place? So kind of what's the process of pitching for people that don't really understand what publishing is?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's changed a lot over the past few years and like since I've gotten into music publishing. Outside cuts used to be a lot more common like in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s than they are now. Most artists, I will say it's about an 80-20 split of songs that are on country radio. About 80% of those songs, the artist who's singing the song was a co-writer on the song. And then there's about 20% of those songs that are completely outside cuts, which means that the artist heard the song, didn't write it, but loved the song and recorded it. And so that's a big difference, you know, but still, it's still 20%. And so we still have to pay attention to it and still have to pitch those songs. So for me, we meet with every label in town. I try to split it up between me and the guy under me, Taylor. We try to take different A&Rs at the different labels. And so like at Warner, I have 3 A&Rs over at Warner that I pitch to on a monthly basis. And then Taylor has 2 over there that he pitches to on a monthly basis. So we tag team. But we have set regular meetings with all the labels in town. And so for me, I used to go into those meetings and try to figure out like what the A&R was looking for specifically at the time. Like I'd shoot him a message and be like, hey, who are you looking for? Like what artist of yours is cutting soon? And try to tailor my pitches towards that. That never worked. And so I started changing my mindset. And so I normally take like the best 8 to 10 songs that have been turned in over the past month that my writers have written and go in with those and play those songs. And so you take those in on a little song link that you have on your phone normally. You go and you meet with the label A&R in their office and you play those songs. And most label A&Rs, they just listen to like a verse and chorus. And so they listen and they tell you to like keep going, or they just put their hand up and say stop. And if they like the song, then they'll take a copy of it. And by take a copy, that doesn't mean it's a hold unless they say, hey, this is a hold. But they take a copy of it and bring it to their team or to their artist, hopefully, and play it for the artist and see if they like it. But most of the time you don't get those. Most of the time you get passes where they just say pass, next song. We get told no a lot in publishing. That's most of our job, which is fine. But those are the label meetings. And then there's some that come up with like artists, like every now and then there will be a cattle call, as we call it in the music industry, where there's an artist who is getting ready to cut, wants to hear like any last minute like big hits that you have. And so they'll call in like a bunch of publishers, let you know like what they're looking for, what type of song, if it's like an up-tempo ballad, like different themes that they're looking for. And you normally pick like 2 to 3 songs and go in there with like 5 different publishers at the same time, and you all sit there and play songs for an artist. So there's lots of those. And then also with pitching, a lot of that's done by email now. So lots of times if I get like a great, I did it today. I had a song that came in that I thought would be good for Dustin Lynch. And so I just emailed it. So I just emailed it over to Zach Crowell, and I was like, hey, I think this would be great for Dustin. Like, can you take a listen? And so a lot of it's done that way too now, just through email.
So like, did you know that Dustin's going to be cutting, or is it just like this song is perfect for him, whether he cuts in 2 years or he cuts tomorrow?
Yeah, he's getting ready. I've heard that he's getting ready to like gear up for his next album. So I knew that he's like early stages of looking again.
Base pitching off that, like off of who you know is cutting soon?
Yes, lots of times. Yeah, especially if I'm just sending an email, you know, I wouldn't send an email to someone who just dropped a record, because I know that they're probably not looking again until like another year. Yeah. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I was about to ask you if like someone wrote a song that they thought was perfect for Morgan Wallen, would you wait until you met with his label, or would you send it right away?
It depends, because I do meet with Big Loud on a monthly basis. And so normally I would wait, but I know that he's getting ready to cut like ASAP. So if like the song came in, I would probably email it like straight away instead of like waiting another week or two.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think the whole like the songwriting is one of my favorite things in the industry. Like just the process of developing a song and then it being pitched and then seeing that come to fruition. It's super cool. And I feel like a lot of people, this leads into my next question. So we talked about the outside cuts. A lot of people outside of the industry don't like artists that cut songs that they didn't write,
which is so silly.
I was telling Cody Johnson is probably one of my all-time favorite artists. He's definitely my favorite artist right now. Just that's what I love. Like his voice, the sound of everything he does is like my favorite to a T. So I was having a conversation with my cousin and he was like, I hate Cody Johnson. I was like, how? He's like, well, he doesn't write any of his own songs. I'm like, so what? He's like, no, I like Zach Bryan and people that write their own songs. Like, I don't like people who don't sing their own songs. I was like, you just don't understand. Like,
yeah,
it's different for those people. So like, what's your opinion on the outside cuts and like the people who don't write their own songs?
Yeah, that's just being naive, you know. Yeah. And not knowing what the music industry really is, you know. I've heard that so many times, and I remember like growing up in the Taylor Swift era, it was such a big deal that she wrote all of her own songs, you know. But outside people, they don't really realize what that is. And the thing about Cody Johnson, even though he's not writing his own songs, he's one of the best song guys in town. Like, you take a look at his albums, he picks the best songs. Like, he has such a good ear, and he picks songs he might not have written it, but it resonates with him in his life. Same thing with Tim McGraw. Tim McGraw, you know, doesn't write his songs, but one of the best song guys in town. And that's why their albums are that good, is because they don't write every single song on it. You know, they look to the best songwriters in town and take those songs, you know, instead of only pigeonholing yourself into, you know, the 50 songs that you wrote last year and picking an album from that. You're going off of, you know, potentially 1,000 songs in town, you know, that you're shuffling through. You're going to have a better album. That's my opinion.
And Cody Johnson, for the record, my favorite song by him is By Your Grace, which he wrote by himself.
Yeah. So amazing.
To anyone listening that doesn't like people who don't write their own songs, listen to that song. But yeah, I mean, I think like going back to the music business major, like I think that going to school is important, like because I had said before, it kind of shows your employer that you can be somewhere. But I don't think, like you said, it's not the end all be all. A lot of people think it is. Like parents nowadays, like you have to go to school. Like if you don't, like you said, your mm-hmm. parents were like that. Like
yeah.
You can't move to Nashville unless you go to school. But I think just being here is one of the most important things, whether you end up going to school or not. It's being here and learning by just like being thrown into the fire, really. And just like going to events and networking. So what were some of the things that you kind of picked up on when you moved here that helped you along the way? Like advice you heard mm-hmm. or things that you saw other people doing?
Yeah. Let's see. Your first few years in town, I'll say like your first like 3 to 4 years are some of the hardest years because you are probably broke and have like no money and you're trying to figure out like who you want to be, what you want to do. And you're also trying to like find your crew, you know, your crew of friends and people that you're running around with, going to all these networking events and the people that are going to help, you know, get to the next step. So you're figuring out all those things. And you're also just like trying to figure out like the music industry. It's a really crazy industry. It's really hard to balance everything. Like work-life balance is really hard and you're going out all the time. And so just understanding that like when you get here, you don't have to immediately make it. And in those first few years, also comparison is such a big thing. That's something that I really struggled with. Like I had all these friends who were in their first job and some would get promoted after 1 year and then some would get promoted after 2 years. And, you know, I was at my first job for 2.5 years, you know, doing the same thing before I got like the next step up, you know, but just realizing like that your time's going to come, just keep your head down, keep working your butt off and you're eventually going to get there. Cause it really is. It's so easy, no matter like if you're an artist, writer, whatever you do, to just look around and see what's happening for somebody else and be like, why isn't it happening for me yet?
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with that all the time. Like following Music Row magazine or something where you're seeing like all the, or the, what's the like Nashville briefing where they do the industry. Like,
yeah.
I saw you got that.
Yeah.
Damn it. But I mean, seeing that, you're like, oh, like, how can I get that? What can I do? Like, what am I doing wrong where I'm not getting that? Like, I know a lot of people probably struggle with that. So I'm glad that you brought that up because that is, no matter what you're doing, even if you're not in the music business, like, people struggle with that.
Yeah, it's so easy. I was talking to, who's I talking to? Oh, Carson Wallace. I don't know if you know him. Yeah. But we got coffee whenever he was just starting out. He, like, DM'd me on Instagram and asked to like pick my brain on some stuff, and he was at Belmont at the time, and he was like, man, like I know so many of my buddies are like getting publishing deals and stuff like that, and it's so hard to compare myself to that. And I was like, yeah, but you don't know what their deal really is, you know? Who knows, first of all, if they're actually getting offered these publishing deals, and if they are getting offered a publishing deal, it might be a really bad one that like you wouldn't even want to take. Like, and same thing like work-wise, like you don't know what somebody's situation really is at their company, you know, and you don't know if they're really happy, you don't know what their job like really is like. And so lots of times you look around and it seems like somebody is, you know, so happy and doing so great, but it's not the reality, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like the social media like relationship thing
too. Yeah, totally.
Like everyone's yeah. relationship looks amazing on yeah. social media, but they're like miserable in real yeah. life.
It's always the people who like post the most yeah. too. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something to take into account for like when you're comparing yourself to whether you're an artist or just in the industry or just in life in general. But before we wrap up, I want to talk about the Spotify thing that's going on.
Ooh.
Can you kind of explain what is happening to the people that see it on social media but don't fully understand it?
Okay. I can't give you like the full like nitty gritty because I'm not even well educated in it enough. But from what I understand, like Spotify has been screwing songwriters for several years. This isn't just like a brand new thing. Like Spotify has always paid the least. Whenever you look at who's paying royalties, I think that Amazon Music actually pays the best as far as streaming services. They pay really well. Apple Music pays really well. And then Spotify is like, shoot, like half of what all the other streaming services pay. Like it is not awesome. And so that's always been a big thing that a lot of people in town have been fighting for. And a lot of people in the music industry, like NSAI, has been really going to bat for songwriters over the past few years. But recently, so Spotify came up with some bundle package that they can offer. I think it's to it's like a family bundle package or something like that. But basically, like, by doing that, multiple people can use the same streaming service and not pay as much to songwriters. And so it's basically a way for Spotify to get around the fact that they have to pay songwriters like a certain amount and to cut back
so
on their costs.
So they make all the money when the songwriters don't.
Yes. Yeah. And so, not great. That came out, and obviously writers are not happy about it, and NSAI is really going to bat for songwriters and trying to get this fixed. But I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's interesting. But anytime that you see somebody like canceling their Spotify subscription, that's why.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of writers do that. And then I think like last week I saw something, some news article where the owner or CEO of Spotify like cashed out like however many millions after all this happened. Which is absurd.
That's never a good sign. Yeah. Yeah.
So their stock is going to shit the bed pretty quick.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
But I mean, yeah, I just kind of wanted to, for the people that are like in the industry that don't understand it, that aren't in the publishing side, or people that are just trying to get into it that don't fully understand it, because I see it a lot and I fully didn't, like, I don't fully understand what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this is me being a publisher, but songwriters always get the short end of the stick whenever it comes to getting paid out and royalties and things like that. And hopefully things start to get more even. I don't think it will ever be exactly even, but they definitely deserve more than what they're getting paid right now.
Can you explain the importance of a BMI or ASCAP or one of those companies that you can... What are they like? What's
PROs?
PRO, yeah.
Yeah. They're important for so many different reasons. First of all, the main reason is for a songwriter to get paid. So basically, if you have songs that are out on streaming services, on the radio, XM, whatever it is, getting played live, in order to get paid royalties for those, you have to register with a PRO. So you have to register with BMI, ASCAP, or CSAC with one of those. And so they have a system where they track your songs, how much they get paid, and they pay you out for your percentage of royalties for that. And so that's the biggest reason. Another reason is for networking. A lot of writers looking for the first time pub deal got those deals through their PRO rep. So a lot of people, like, BMI is amazing. They're all great. Just using BMI as an example, they've been really good at, if they see a writer that's signed to BMI who they really believe in and they think that that writer's got something, they'll connect them with publishers around town and be like, hey, I think that this writer's awesome. You should take a look at them and meet with them. At least, like, set them up on some co-writes, you know. And so if you're looking to connect the dots as a writer to a publishing company, it's really, really great to get a good relationship with your PRO rep.
So to a lot, there are a lot of songwriters that listen to this podcast. How, like, what's your advice to them specifically about going about getting a publishing deal? Would you just, like, recommend they hit someone up on in their DMs and say, like, hey, would love to grab coffee, or, like, just unsolicited send, like, a link of songs to their email, or, like, what's just how do these songwriters find their way to getting a publishing deal?
Yeah, so many ways. Definitely don't do the unsolicited send. That never goes over well normally, because we get so many of those every single day, and we're already listening to 100 songs a day of our own roster. And so, you know, normally when we get those emails, probably not going to listen to it.
I get them all the time, too. I just wanted to make sure that was said so that everybody
don't do
knows.
It.
Yeah. It's not an option.
Yeah, do not do that. Not a good idea. Let's see, if you're just getting started, start playing rounds in town. That's so important. I mean, Live Oak, the Why Not Wednesday rounds, that's where I built my career at starting out. And I was at those rounds like every single week. And so if you're playing those rounds and the rounds that, you know, publishers hang out at, you're going to get noticed. You know, a publisher is going to more than likely be in the crowd watching you at some point. So definitely try to get into those circuits in Nashville. And then just networking, try to get into like the right crowd. There's always that next up and coming writer crowd in town. And so trying to get with that, trying to get in with people who have publishing deals or who are about to sign publishing deals. Because if you're in with those guys and you're writing songs with them, you know, their publisher is going to hear it and going to be noticing your name as well. And then also if you're out and about and organically meet another publisher, introduce yourself. Do not be afraid to do that. And if you get that face-to-face time with them and feel comfortable, ask them to go get coffee. You know, most people in this town are really nice and they had people who helped them. And our jobs are to find the next big thing in town and the next big writer. And so they're going to want to meet with you, you know, but just make sure that you're doing it from an organic place and, you know, genuinely want to be interested in them and like looking for some advice. Yeah.
Hell yeah. What is your best advice to wrap up? Oh, your gosh. Best advice that you
I
could
knew you
give
were gonna ask me this.
To did you listen to my other episodes?
No, I just had a feeling.
Oh, thank you. Your best advice to like people trying to get into the music business, or people that are in it that are just trying to figure out what they want to do.
Okay. Okay. People who want to get into the music industry, move here. Like we talked about earlier, you have to be here. Whether you want to be a writer, an artist, work on the business side, like it's so important just to be here. Like you can't do this job from, you know, I couldn't do this job from Arkansas. Like you've got to be here networking, being in town, being in the business. And then, wait, what was the second question?
People that are in the industry that are trying to figure out maybe what they want to do or...
Okay. Yeah, figuring out what you want to do. Do what you're passionate about. Like for me, I feel like it was more natural since I loved writing and I was already a songwriter. And so that was just such a natural fit for me. But it was something that I was really, really passionate about. Like I love songs and every single day I want to listen to songs and I want to hear a song that makes me cry, you know, and makes me feel something. And so definitely find that thing that you're really, really passionate about and could wake up every single day and be happy doing. Yeah, so definitely go after that.
Yeah, because I know there's a lot of people in this that listen to my podcast that are like interns,
mm-hmm.
or just younger people like in college trying to decide, like they're in the industry, but they're just trying to figure out what avenue, like you had said earlier, like they're taking the internships, just kind of testing the waters of what it is that they love.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that advice. And I'm sure they will too, because hearing it from someone that's done it.
Yeah.
That you've been in their shoes where you were the intern trying to figure out what avenue that you fell in love with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's, like you had mentioned, you could do booking and just not fall in love with it.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're like, okay, I know what I don't like and what I don't want to do.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And maybe find like an industry executive that you look up to and you're like, I want to be them in 10 years, you know, and follow that path. Like for me, it was like Greg Gallo, who's an industry vet, and I saw him and what he was doing in publishing, and I was like, man, I want to be that in a few years, you know? So finding someone like that to kind of like model your career after, that's helpful too.
And to piggyback off that, I think reaching out to people and like getting coffee, mm-hmm. and just building your network and kind of just learning. Like, don't be afraid to ask questions or learn from somebody.
Yep.
Like there's always, I'm learning every day. And I'm sure you're learning every day.
Yep.
Especially when you're doing artist development.
Yep.
Like there is something to learn every single day because the industry changes every day.
Yep. Absolutely.
So I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks.
Battling
thanks
for
having
the
me.
5 o'clock traffic.
I know. Yeah, we made
here.
It. No, this was fun. Thanks.
Yeah. I appreciate you. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Behind the Music Biz. Thanks to our guest, Lindsay Will. And, we'll see y'all next episode.